Kristen's story begins much like mine and yours might have. Local mom, involved in her neighborhood and school communities. Just several days home from the birth of her youngest, ready to navigate this new life as a family of six. And then she was thrown a curveball. A really big curveball.
Welcome to Wondercast, a community collaborative podcast supporting families navigating the complexities of chronic illness. Wondercast is brought to you by the generous sponsorship of Texas Oncology. Texas Oncology, more breakthroughs, more victories, experts in cancer care.
In continued support of American Heart Month, we introduce you today to Kristen. Her story is one of chaos, vulnerability, resiliency, gratitude, and, well, grace. It's the life that blooms after the unimaginable. Here to share her story with you today. This is Kristen.
My name is Kristen, and I am a mother to four amazing kiddos that range in age from 7 all the way up to 18. And I'm married to my best friend and amazing boyfriend, Steve, and we live in Austin, Texas.
That's fantastic. And today's Valentine's Day, which I think is perfect for Heart Month. Here's we're talking all things heart, and works perfectly for you because you have a personal connection with all things heart as well, having been the recipient of a heart. And I would love it if you're comfortable sharing a little bit about your kind of journey with that and kind of how that all came into be.
Certainly. So right after our youngest child was born, I had had a wonderful, normal pregnancy, but 24 hours after we got home, I suffered a heart attack just out of nowhere. Ended up being transported, you know, via ambulance after CPR and resuscitation at my house to a hospital nearby. Over the course of several days, had lots of testing. Couldn't really figure out why this had happened, but it happened again there in the hospital. A second, much more major heart attack. And that led to about a month of me being totally asleep. And multiple procedures were attempted to save my native heart and just keep me alive. Some very, very big stuff. I was on full life support. The most advanced form of life support is called ECMO. And I was attached to that for a period of time. And eventually woke up and learned that a heart pump had been implanted. It's called an LVAD. That was keeping me alive. But it was about a month later. And the process of just kind of learning that my heart had been through an extreme crisis and was probably not going to recover at this point, and I was going to need to have a heart transplant in the future. That is the news that my husband had to share with me at that point in time. So fast forward many years later, I am here. I have received an amazing gift of a heart transplant. It was incredibly successful. I feel great. I have medical things I have to do, and I am on daily immune suppression and will be for the rest of my life. So that introduces, you know, some other things. But I'm here today, still mom of four, still doing mom stuff and living a very full life.
How old were your kids? I know you had a tiny, but how old were your other children at the time of your heart attacks?
So my newborn was 3 days old, and then I had a 6-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 9-year-old.
Were your children able to see you, or were they not even able to come up to the hospital at all?
They were not up at the hospital at all. I'm not certain how much of that was a decision by my husband and family versus required by the hospital per se. It was very scary, the amount of equipment that was in the room. And I think that my husband likely just made the call that that wasn't a good state to come see mom in. That's when my kids became involved with Wonders and Worries, was during that time. He was so incredibly grateful for Wonders and Worries and still is, and so am I. And the amazing backstory of that, that if we have time, I'd love to share with you, is that years and years prior, like when my first daughter, I think, was five or four, or no, she was younger than that, she was four, I had gone through a coffee drive-thru, and they said, would you like to add a donation for Wonders and Worries? And I said, what is that? And the girl at the window actually knew and proceeded to give me a great explanation of what Wonders and Worries was and did. And I got my coffee and I drove home and I immediately went to the website. And they had a daddy and daughter dance on the website. And I was just, I thought the mission was so cool. I was in love with the whole concept. And I bought tickets for this daddy-daughter dance. And I sent Steve a note that just said, hey, you're taking Lily on a date for a daddy-daughter dance. And he went and they had a great time and met some amazing people there that have stayed in our life since and who were part of kind of our care team, actually, when I had my heart attack. But we never had any clue that we would be on the receiving end of the services at that time. And So I think that's just one of the coolest little things that has happened in our life. It was a coffee shop I didn't normally go to. I normally wouldn't have had time to go home and look up a website, but that day just everything aligned to make that possible. So when I did come out of my long nap, is what I like to refer to it, and he said Wonders and Worries, I knew exactly what it was. There was no need, you know, there was no fear on my part. Where are you taking our children? Who's talking to them? What's happening? You know, I knew and I was just like, thank you. Thank you so much. Because that's exactly what I would have wanted for them during that time.
Gosh, what a comfort. I think as a mom, just myself, and I know obviously what Wonders and Worries is, but even if I didn't, just to learn about it in that moment, what a comfort for anyone to know that my kids are okay. I feel like that would be my biggest question is, are my kids okay? Are you okay? And then am I okay? I feel like as moms, that's the chopping block order. And just to know that they are going to be okay. And they do have someone they're talking to and listening to and getting their questions answered. Because you're right, especially with the heart, there are so many wires and leads and machines that would have been terrifying in the very beginning without all those explanations and somebody there. And the difference versus a pediatric hospital is lots of times there is not a child life specialist right there in the hospital like you would find in the pediatric setting to help explain this is what this does. This is why this machine makes a sound. This is what you're smelling in the air. And so when we talk about the senses that kids all take in, those are things that adults fail sometimes to notice. But kids notice everything because it's right at their eye level.
When I get to eventually come to the hospital to visit me, it was amazing the prep that Wonders and Worries provided to Steve for that experience because it's things he never would have thought to do. Mm-hmm. So he actually walked in the hospital with his phone at our child's height, like the one that was, he split it up in two different visits with my son first and then my two daughters together. And the newborn did not come for a while, but
yes.
I mean, they did bring her to lay her on me a lot to try and help with bonding when I was the long nap period of this, but I have lots of photos of her on my chest and, you know, they were able to work around the wires and things because she was just a tiny newborn. But with the older kids who were going to notice everything, he was able to walk through the hospital first with his phone set to record a video, then watch it and watch everything that they were going to encounter as they came in at their height, and then work with the nursing staff there to close doors or cover things up and make sure, like in my room, all the scary looking things had white blankets over them. So nobody was going to see some gross something hanging off of mom's bed, and all the wires and all the leads were covered up. So it could just be my face. And so that was just a tremendous gift because, again, he would have just brought them up to the hospital. And who knows what they would have been thinking had they seen those scary sights or smelled those smells or what have you.
I think about just the pictures that you have now. I think as a mom, we carry, even though we say we understand, obviously it's not your fault that you had this heart condition just randomly appear, but just knowing that you missed out on newborn baby time, but now you have these pictures to show that you did still get it. It was different. It's not how you had it with your other children, but you still had it. I love that your husband was intentional about still putting that in action and placing her on your chest and getting those pictures so that when you did wake up, you were able to have that legacy and see, like, look, I was present, even if I wasn't, I was in my long sleep, my long nap. I was still present in my own way and able to provide that comfort that that's what she needed. She needed your smell and she needed your snuggle, even if you were in your long nap.
And I am the youngest of three sisters. So my two older sisters and my mother lived with us at the time. They were wonderful advocates too for that mothering aspect that was so critical for the newborn. And obviously I wasn't awake to hear the conversations, but in the pictures I can see that they're there. And I know that they were very vocal about saying this, the baby needs to be with Kristen and helping orchestrate all the logistics involved with that. Because it's kind of crazy when you have a newborn and you're trying to bring them into an ICU unit. You have to have the baby fed and diaper changed, and it has to be timed with my medication so that maybe I could be a little more aware of my surroundings when they placed her on me so I could respond at all, you know, to her. And lots of cleaning, obviously, for both the baby and me had to occur. So, you know, it was an incredible team effort that my husband and my sisters and my mother, I'm sure there were lots of other people involved, friends, family, just to get those singular, maybe 30-minute visits to take place. But so critical.
Gosh, it is. And what a fascinating show of love. Like, that to me is love. That is the purest form of love, is when your community can come and help a mom be with her baby. Like, that is, there's no beautiful, more beautiful form of love. As you became more and more aware and they were able to get your LVAD really working more independently and pull you off of the ECMO and help you feel like you were more aware of your surroundings at that point, what would you say was something that really kind of gave you life force? What was something that helped you be sane for that long hospital stay?
Well, my sisters and my mother worked really hard to make my hospital room very motivating. They all are fabulous at design. And they
Oh, that's nice.
They went and got all kinds of pictures of me with my children and traveling and family vacation type photos. And they had them blown up, you know, in 11 by 16 type sizes. And those were postered like wallpaper all over my room. And I think that that made a tremendous difference for me, because the person that was in that bed was not the person in those photos. I'm sorry, but being able to see that girl up there and know those are the kids I'm trying to get back to, you know, it made every single day, every single task that came my way so much more doable, because inevitably there would be a therapist that would show up to try and help me learn how to sit up in the bed or to swallow properly, because I had had a trach, so I had lost the ability to swallow food, and I had to be taught how to do that again. And lots of things that are incredibly painful just and daunting, because my heart was also not functioning fully. So you're just so tired and exhausted, and being able to put my eyes up on the wall and focus on those kiddos and the healthy me, happy me in those photos really gave me the motivation I needed to stick it out. I also had lots of drawings from the children, so many sweet things. There was this Lego heart that the kids built, and it was sitting on my windowsill. And I was just spoiled, really, with so many beautiful things to see and look at in my room. So that made a big difference.
And I think for our listeners, if you find yourself listening right now from a hospital bed and you're feeling like the end is not in sight, you don't know what your motivation is, maybe find your goal. Find what helps you see what's ahead. Is it your family? Is it your friends? Is it a special trip you took? Is it a special trip you're going to take? There's always something that can help us remember there is more, and there is more for you. And I love that for you, it was your children and getting back to the life that you knew was going to be and is. It's so nice to see you now living that life. Like, how many years later now are you?
We're at 7 years now.
7 years. And what does 7 years look like? 7 years post all of this? Do you have monthly appointments still, or is it much more spread out?
It has become much more spread out, which is amazing, because initially it is a lot. It's kind of a part-time job. It's just going to the doctor every day. So, but that tapers off if you're doing well as a transplant patient, and I have been. And so at this point, I have labs about every 3 months, and I have doctor's visits every 6 months. And now there's others, that's the heart doctors, right? My transplant doctors. There are other specialties that are now involved in my life due to side effects from the transplant drugs. So I do see those doctors. So every couple of months, I'm going to be in a doctor's office. Only once a year do I have to have an invasive, heart cath to check on the health of my heart, along with a series of other kind of annual checks. So to go to that level of distance is incredible. And at the time, if you had told me that I would be here, I wouldn't have believed you, because initially those were weekly, and then every 2 weeks, and then every 3 weeks. And it's just crazy to me to look back now and think, oh my gosh, I got through all of that. We did all of that. And we had 4 children, and Steve had a job, and I was, trying to reengage with life and be I'd been a very involved school mom before. And so I wasn't doing quite that, but we made it. We got here. Don't give up. Never give up. I would say that. And I still have to tell myself that sometimes. I mean, even doing well, like transplant is a lifelong maintenance thing. And there are medications that I take every day that are critical, and they have to be taken 12 hours apart. You don't ever miss a dose. And they suppress my immune system so that my body will not start attacking my heart and cause rejection of this beautiful, organ that I've been given. And it can be daunting at times. There are side effects that come with it. There are days when sometimes my body just doesn't feel awesome. And so as a family, we've had to learn how to adjust to that and have ways to communicate, hey, this is just one of those days where mom is not going to be 100%. And it's not personal. And sometimes it's super inconvenient, and it impacts things that are important to us and the kids. And other times, we have these beautiful moments where it feels like this never happened.
And I think about the compassion and the empathy that you have instilled in your kids now for growing up in a household where there is chronic illness. They know that life is messy. And I think that is probably the biggest gift that we can give our kids, is for them to know that in their lifetime, things can be incredibly hard and unpredictable and messy, but then it can also still be beautiful and joy-filled and fun. Doesn't have to be perfect to be wonderful. And I think that's a great gift you've given them, both you and your husband.
Thank you. We're definitely hitting a high bar on not perfect.
Right. We're right there with you. And we don't have that heart history, but we're right there with you. One of the things I do want to touch on, because it does come up a lot with some of our parents and our kids in Wonders and Worries, is they often ask about this concept of guilt around receiving a heart from somebody else who has passed away. And I don't know if that is anything that you ever encountered. A lot of the kids we work with bring it up in our sessions, where they talk about, it's kind of weird that my mom or dad have a heart that belongs to someone else. And we explain to them that, of course, that heart is a gift, and it was something that is helping them stay alive, but your mom is still your mom. It's not like your mom is now that person that has passed away. And we help them understand that difference. Did those questions ever come up in your home, or was it ever discussed with your kids?
For the kids, I think we took a fairly proactive approach on talking about that. And selfishly, that was probably because I needed to do that for my own peace of mind about proceeding with transplant. One of the gifts / difficulties, I would say, in my story was having the LVAD first. Sometimes people go into heart failure and are immediately able to receive a transplant. I mean, it's not generally immediate, but you know, they're put on some sort of support in the hospital and then they receive a transplant. After that, they don't go to a mechanical device first. The fact that I was on an LVAD meant I would have at least 6 months to process the idea of transplant while being supported by that device. And it ended up being closer to a year.
Oh, wow.
And so that gave me time to physically get back to a functional point, which is good before going into transplant. The stronger you are physically, the likelihood of a successful transplant is higher. So that was good. But then this whole emotional part was really the bigger part to bite off and try and process and deal with. So for the kids, I talked to them quite a bit about what it means to be an organ donor and the thoughts I was having about that. I had signed up to be an organ donor when I was younger, so I was grateful that I had thought about it in the past somewhat and made that choice, because I think it allowed me to think about someone else in the world choosing that. But it is it's a terribly heavy topic. And the kids and I pray a lot together, or did during that time. And we would pray about the donor and the donor family. And we were actually not praying for anything bad to happen to this person. We were praying the opposite. We were praying that God would be protecting them. And I know that sounds really bizarre. It's a difficult thing to explain, but I wanted us to really walk through, this is why you would choose to be an organ donor. This is what happens as far as when someone in the medical profession would decide that that was something that could be proceeded with, and making sure the children understood there was no hope for that person at that point of having additional medical care save them, and that it was the decision to have a legacy to pass on, something you can do after death to be a hero to someone else's family. What's incredible to me is that I think kids get that concept faster than adults. We're almost immediately like, well, of course, I would want to be an organ donor because I'm not going to need it anymore. If I could save somebody else, why wouldn't I? You know, to them, it was like, duh, this is black and white, Mom. But as their mother, even having signed up to be an organ donor, I was really struggling because I'm also a mother. And I know that there's this mother and father out there somewhere that is going to lose their child at some point. And that is devastating to me. And I still get very emotional about it. I don't know my donor's family, and I may never get the chance to meet them. There's a whole process around that, and an opt-in and an opt-out kind of process. So what I told the kids repeatedly was, if I am offered a heart, if I'm given a heart, that heart will become part of our family. And we will treat that heart like a new member of our family. And we will love that heart. And we will take that heart everywhere we can and give that heart all the experiences we possibly can. And that's what we have done. We gave my heart a name. We call her Grace. Grace is talked about a lot in our house. And anytime we do something new or exciting, we have a moment to say, thank you, Grace, because this is possible because of you. And thank you to Grace's family for allowing Grace to be part of our life. And then, you know, we talk about maybe this is the first time Grace has been here, or maybe this is the first time she's done snorkeling or seen the ocean or all sorts of things. So that's a very long answer to your question, but
such a beautiful answer. it made me teary. So, oh, that's so lovely. What would you say that you find yourself now living differently after what you've gone through versus how you were living before?
Well, so many things are different. My perspective is completely different, which is a good thing. I just have had my eyes opened to, I think, a better understanding of what is really important and what kind of priorities I need to have in my life. A perfect house is not top priority. The kids looking, you know, dressed to the nines is not a priority anymore. Just every day making sure the people in my life, at least in my household, I'm not always good at doing this to everybody in my life, and that's something I need to work on. But every single day, I hope my kids are leaving this house knowing that they are abundantly loved by their mother and fully accepted for whoever they happen to be that day. So that's kind of goal number one. Goal number two is the same with my husband as well, right? Like, he and I have such a strong foundation that doesn't require a ton of communication that I think we can go days sometimes without reiterating to one another, hey, you're important to me. I love you. I'm so grateful for you in my life. And I think after this experience, that's been something I've been trying to do a better job of, just saying the words and meaning it, right?
Yeah.
So that would be a different thing here. I think also just being aware that life, the plan I have for my life, is kind of irrelevant, right? It's important to have goals and to have intention around what we do. But so many things that have been the best things in my life that have occurred have not been of my own planning. They have just happened. And I think it's, for me, learning to be willing to accept the new things that have come into my life and into my children's lives and find a way to respond to those that make it a positive experience for all of us and allow there to be faith that it's a growth opportunity. Even if it seems bad on the surface or challenging or completely counter to what we thought we were going to be doing, just have faith. It's going to be okay as long as we keep our heads about us and keep our priorities straight. So those are the like philosophical differences, I would say. You know, the day-to-day differences are obviously, we talked a little bit about my medication and immune suppression, and the pandemic kind of blew that out of the water.
Oh.
So
I can't even imagine. Oh, I can't even imagine all of the, because the heart community was one of the most vulnerable community for early on first round of COVID. Mm-hmm.
It was really sort of brutal time. But then also there was this huge gift because of transplant. I'd already been trained on all kinds of protocols and we had implemented them in our home because already we wore masks during flu season. Now, my kids didn't so much, but definitely, like, I was the mom picking them up from school with a mask on, usually November through January. And we reduced our social calendar during those months. And we have, you know, a protocol for when the kids come home from school. You know, you drop your bags here, you take your shoes off here, you sanitize, you go straight for shower, change clothes, you know, the dirty clothes go in the laundry. And we're just cautious. We had learned all of those skills, which was tremendous and helpful because it wasn't so shocking. But then I think the duration and just realizing we really cannot engage with people outside of our home safely for an extended period of time and trying to figure out how to make life for the children somewhat normal and not hinder their development was a challenge. It still is a challenge to some degree. My kids are still the kids in school wearing masks when no one else is. Mm-hmm. And we still have to be incredibly diligent and careful because the treatments that exist for most of the population, I'm not able to have as a transplant patient.
Yeah. I think it's what a lot of people don't know and understand is that a lot of our listeners that maybe have chronic illness or immunosuppression do because they are in the minority with you. But it's hard for their kids. We hear that in our teen group that I run once a month with Wonders and Worries. The teens do vocalize. They're having to educate their peers when they're asked, why are you still wearing a mask? It's over. Or you don't need to wear a mask anymore. And they're like, no, I'm wearing a mask for my mom or my dad or my grandma in the home. Like they explain, which is great advocacy and education. It's hard for these teens to have to be sometimes that voice. You just want to be like, come on, world. Catch up, get the memo, like learn it. But I feel like they do it and they're not ever frustrated that they have to do it. They're just frustrated that their peers don't already know.
And yeah. I mean, what you said earlier, there is a gift in that for the kids. It's hard to see when you're going through it. But I think about just the skills they're developing about communication and advocating for the minority and being compassionate and being willing to stand up and be the odd man out at times. And I am just so impressed by the maturity. And I don't think they have any clue that they have that. I don't think they can see it in themselves, but I see it. And I would not have been so brave and courageous at their age as they are.
Kids rise up. They see these challenges and they see their adversity and they get there. It's just they sometimes need help to get through the scary parts, but they get there. And I'm grateful that they have parents that support them through it. Anything that you feel like I did not touch on that you would like to share? Or is there anything that you would like to say to anyone in the thick of it right now that you feel like I didn't address?
You know, for parents that are in the thick of it, first off, you are a warrior and you can do this. and it's okay to not be perfect in front of your kids all the time. And it is okay to let them see you be vulnerable. And it actually is okay to some days just fall into a puddle in the floor. You just have to get back up in front of them. You just have to let them see you rise up from that state. And I have had a hard lesson in learning that. So I hope others can maybe learn faster than I did. But you know, my kids are not traumatized for life because they've seen me be a mess, because they've gotten to see me be resilient too. So that would be one thing. The other thing I would say is, just logistically speaking, if you're in the thick of it, whether you're hospitalized or not, it is really, really heavy on your caretaker or caretakers. And those people may include your children, right? But also your spouse or your family members or what have you. And so as much as you can, those individuals, think proactively about how are things going to be communicated about your status? Because they may be overwhelmed with learning about what's going on with you, plus responding to every caring person's text and email and phone call about how you are. And they may find themselves at the end of every day just completely depleted because they've explained to 15 different people what's going on. They've also tried to think about the children and how to care for the children. They get lost in that shuffle very quickly. And so just some practical things are assigning a person to do your communications. And whether that's your spouse or whether that's somebody's friend, you know, they can check in and say, would you like me to post an update on a site like CaringBridge today? When you want that to happen, you text it to me, I will do it for you, right? And I will field all the comments that come up and questions that may appear. And if someone calls you, you can shoot me their number and I will have time to text with them about what's going on. I think that's an incredibly helpful thing. You don't have to give everyone an answer. You don't have to accept help or a meal from every single person that offers it if it is not actually helpful to you and your family at that time. And there are polite ways to decline offers of help. And you just have to help your partner maybe think about what those are. because that is a challenge. It can be a challenge. I guess, you know, more than anything, just give each other grace, give your children grace, and know that whatever situation you're in at this moment, it is not forever. And anything you can do to pull positivity into your life, to see examples of things that are people getting better, draw those close to you. Everything that makes you happy, pull it right into your view, right where you are. And everything that is negative or a downer, this is not the time to be watching the news. This is not the time to be watching sad shows. This is the time for laughter, comedy, silly stuff, loving moments, and fill your life with those. Push the other stuff aside for a while, and you will be so much better off for it. And so will your journey and your healing. And I am rooting for you.
Thank you for tuning in to our podcast today. Please subscribe and continue to check back as our content is ever evolving. For questions or specific content-related requests, please send an email to podcast@wondersandworries.org.